From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear from Rod Bain at USDA about the ag census that was completed in 2022 and the results released earlier this year. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at 426 and three quarters. That was down 3.5 cents. July 4 3/4 lower at 436 and a quarter. And December futures at $4.60 down 4 3/4. May soybeans 15 1/4 lower. The settlement price $11.34 1/4. July 11.49 down 15 1/4. And new November at 11.49 1/4 down 12 cents. Bean meal off 70 and the bean oil 88 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat for the day in the July up 0.75 cents at $5.53. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural trade. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. I take it you're in the field planting today.
Yes. We're planting both beans and corn today. So, trying to get after it. We missed a couple of those showers actually this week. We haven't gotten any rain at all. I know some folks have. And since Easter, while we've had quite a bit of rain, we really haven't had much in the last 8 or 9 days. So, our fully tiled fields definitely dried out pretty good. And then, we had all that heat over the last several days, and that's really made a big difference.
How's the field working up?
Really good. Field conditions are great. We were working ground there before Easter, actually, on some greener stuff. It gotten green on us, and, we're phenomenal, not a whole lot of moisture at the time. We got all that moisture, and I think maybe we just gave it a couple extra days of that heat, and it seemed to really help it out. So it's worked up really nice.
Tell me about the marketplace for today. Looks like the soybeans were leading to the downside.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the markets aren't as much fun to talk about as planting progress, I can tell you that. Pretty much this bean market just continues to struggle. Over the last several days, we just haven't really done much good whatsoever. Last week, of course, we closed real strong there on Friday, double-digit gains, but we still had double-digit losses for the week. So, you came in here this week kind of hoping maybe there'd be a little follow-through action from Friday, but that's absolutely not what's been the case. And so it's been kind of aggravating to see corn kind of fell under some pressure today as well. I've got to think that all the planters rolling through the Midwest, I know that some folks are still sitting. I know a lot of folks aren't. And so I got to think that that's got something to do with, some of the weakness that we're continuing to see here.
Is it because the USDA numbers and just in general farmers are planting beans earlier and the trade is seeing that number tick up really quick, faster than the corn number, do you think that there's pressure on the soybean side?
Yeah, I think that's got something to do with it for sure. I mean, I think overall, this bean market's just not been able to find any buyers show up whenever we've had one of these bounces. It just seems like there's not much interest in owning soybeans right now. World balance sheet, it's still, it's not burdensome, but it certainly isn't snug. You look at the U.S. balance sheet, and it's going to be the biggest since 2019. And, we were still a couple, $3 lower for an average cash price, for that marketing year. So I do think there's a lot of folks saying, hey, if we do end up with 86.5 or better on acres and we get these things planted early, and we have, a 52, 54 bushel national crop, we could be looking at a awfully big stocks number. Yes, crush has been good still, but crush margins have really dipped over the last several weeks, and it's definitely a concern.
What do you see in the corn market?
Yeah, well, the corn market, I look at it a couple different ways. I mean, overall, I'm not friendly corn long term. I've been hopeful that we would see some sort of a rally in this corn market. You could see that, of course, from Brazil. I know they're talking about really downgrading the crop there in Paraná for the Safrinha crop. And so, I don't know that that's the only area that's had inclement weather, but I don't know that it's bad enough to make a big enough impact that you can really rally this corn market. So you need a different catalyst. Obviously, other commodities have been seeing a lot of buying come in. Corn and beans just haven't been able to join the party yet. So, I'm afraid if you look at this from a fundamental standpoint, Todd, it's not a real rosy picture. And so you've got to think that if you get some inflationary buying of commodities, maybe we can find favor with a few of these fund managers and they'll want to add that to their portfolio, because barring that, it looks pretty rough right now for this corn market.
For both corn and soybeans, new crop sales, what do you tell producers as it relates to when they can make the next move in that area, especially if they have not started at this point?
If they haven't started at this point, obviously it's a tough game. I mean, I totally get it. I understand the frustration. A lot of the growers that we talk to have break evens that are at or above today's market, at a fairly decent yield. And so it makes it very challenging to market here. I guess the only thing I would tell them is that understand you still have a lot of risk between here and the percentage level that you're at as far as insurance is concerned. If it's 85%, it's just a shade under $4. So there's still a ton of risk here. And so I don't know that I just want to sit here and hope that the market goes higher by any means, because sub $4 corn is very much a possibility this calendar year. If you would end up with a 90 or above on acres and then have a trend line yield or better, it's going to be two straight years of 2 billion bushel carry. And that's not something that, you want to go back and look at historically what that looks like as in correlation of prices. So, it's a very challenging situation, but I would certainly lock a floor in, leave myself some flex to the upside, at the very least, because I think producers need to understand how much risk there is still here.
Clearly, there are acres still available that could be planted this year. Corn and soybeans are both down about a million acres each from the previous year. Will those show back up, and are they likely to show back up as corn as opposed to soybean?
Well, with what it takes to put corn in the ground right now, Todd, I just don't know how excited a guy gets, whenever you're looking at, these corn down at these levels. I mean, whenever we were making decisions there last fall on what to plant, these corn was 50 cents higher than this, so you're staring 460 corn in the face, and it's pretty tough to come up with black ink, unless you're in a very low cost type setup. And so, I've got to think that beans would win that particular debate. As far as other stuff, I think out west, there's definitely still a pretty big push for this milo and sorghum deal. And, but in our part of the world, I think if someone didn't put anhydrous on, they've got to be looking closely at soybeans, even though bean prices continue to dip. We've heard several producers talk about, switching a handful of acres from corn over to beans that didn't have anhydrous on. I don't think it's anything widespread because we had such a good fall last year, but it's definitely been something we've been talking about with folks.
Hey, thank you much.
Absolutely, Todd. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Stay safe on the tractor. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Up next, the United States Department of Agriculture released the results from the 2022 Census of Agriculture earlier in the year. We'll hear from Rod Bain at USDA about some of the decision makers on the farm and at the ranch as well, and how combing through the data from the census gives some insight into who they are and how they work on the farm and ranch.
Demographics have always been a key data set within USDA's Census of Agriculture series. What do the numbers reveal regarding the most recent census conducted in the year 2022? National Agricultural Statistics Service statistician Virginia Harris delved into some of the demographics during this year's USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum, just days after the initial set of Census of Ag findings were released. For instance, in looking at farm producers and total farms between census,
the number of producers in 2022 decreased about 0.8% from 2017 to 3.37 million people. This is a much smaller change compared to the decrease in the number of farms, which was 6.9%. This is due to a larger share of farms reporting multiple producers.
With the number of 1 to 2 producer operated farms decreasing from the previous census of agriculture, and the number of farms operated by 3 or more growers increasing in 2022.
About 60% of all farms reported more than one person involved in farm decision making.
In terms of structure of farm operation by gender,
farms with at least one female producer are much less likely to be operated by a single person. Most women are involved in farms with other people. Just 11% of farms with a female producer have just one person involved, while men are much more likely to be operating farms as sole operators of that farming operation.
A further breakdown of data on women in farms reveals
female producers account for 36% of all producers, while almost 60%, 58% to be exact, of farms have at least one female producer on the operation. On average, farms with female producers are smaller both in acreage and in sales.
There are also notable demographics regarding female farm operators by region.
Farms in the western part of the country are much more likely to have a female producer than those farms in the Midwest.
The census from cycle to cycle introduces new questions to further expand understanding of what certain data objectives mean. For instance, in the 2022 census, a new question on the survey form asked about marketing decisions on the farm by gender. 61% of male producers make farm marketing decisions, while 50% of women make marketing decisions associated with the farm. Regarding other operation decision aspects,
female producers, their highest participation in decision making were in the categories of day-to-day decisions, record keeping, and financial management aspects of the farm. Male producers were much more involved than female producers in making decisions about land use and crops.
Harris acknowledges the demographic of average age for farmers usually generates interest due to increased age from census to census.
The average age of producers increased 57.5 in 2017 to 58.1 in 2022.
Yet,
absolute difference in average age is smaller than we've seen in the past few census cycles.
And regarding breakdown of average producer age by region,
producers in the Southeast and the Southwest tend to be older than the overall average.
The Census of Agriculture and its 2022 edition also spanned coverage of various demographics such as young and new and beginning farmers, producers by race, and by military service.
That was Rod Bain from the United States Department of Agriculture, and he had pulled some sound bites from Virginia Harris of the National Agricultural Statistics Service as she was speaking at the Ag Forum earlier in the year. Here are some other numbers I think are very important from the Census of Agriculture, and they may be a little startling, but they've not changed that much since the 2005-06 Census of Agriculture, when I first made note of these numbers. These are from a table called Table 41 in the 2022 Census of Agriculture. It shows that the total number of farms in the United States is 1.9 million. Given that, to get to just 10% of all gross sales of farms of all types, that's livestock and truck farms and grain and oil seed farms and all the other kinds of farms that you can find in the U.S., to get to 10% of those 1.9 million farms of all sales, you only have to contact 451 of them. That's an extraordinarily small number. However, to get to 75% of all sales, again, a small number in context, you have to reach 89,210. I'm going to give you some more information on those farms in just a moment. But I do want to talk about the grain and oilseed farms that we primarily service here. If you look at those, the total number of farms in the United States is 422,851. That's all the farms that raise grains, oilseeds, and a few other things like dry peas and dry beans. However, if you want to move to 75% of all sales, the number is just 56,876. Now, in the 422,851, I'll count. But I don't count in the 75% of all sales because my gross sales aren't high enough. However, my brothers and most every other farmer that you see in the field in Champaign County or across Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Kansas, Ohio, Kentucky, all count in that 56,000 number to reach 75% of gross sales. If I were to think about how many of them are actually in the Midwest, it's about 85,000 to 90,000. Again, these are the farmers that you see every day, that your children go to school with, that you see them at social events, you might see them in church. There just aren't that many farmers in the United States. The number 1.9 million counts all kinds of farmers and landowners, but farmers are extraordinarily small. I did some calculations about two decades ago, and these still won't be very far off at this point. Oftentimes you'll see that commercial or might remember a commercial where there was a long table outside dressed in white, and it said that the average farmer in the U.S. served about 125 people, provided food for that many. I did the calculations, and it was 1777. 1,777. I rounded down to 1776 because I like the independence of it all. You're listening to Agricultural Programming from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, where you can sign up for our podcast easily enough. Hit the podcast tab, and then you'll find three players. And wouldn't it be great while you're in the tractor cab if you could listen to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week 2, on demand when you want to? You can go back and review sections by just clicking backwards in that podcast. You can do that easily enough, either by searching out the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, or again, coming to willag.org and hitting the podcast tab, where you'll find the players for both the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy Podcast too, and subscribe to our program and your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple and Spotify. Now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenora is here from T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online, where he presides as the CEO and president. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again today.
Thanks for having me here, Todd. Great to be here, as always.
Let's start right here in the United States. What do you see for the weather over the next week?
Well, there'll be some showers today and even a few strong thunderstorms in parts of the Corn Belt. Once we get beyond that, it'll just be cool for about a week, so nothing major happening rain-wise. Once we get 1 to 2 weeks out, though, that's where we do have some concerns. It's fairly apparent that a number of systems will move across the U.S., starting up late next week and then continuing into early May. At this point, it looks like a fairly decent chance for near and above normal rainfall across a wide area, and that will probably start to impact corn and soybean planting rates once we get into the latter part of the month and into early May. So it'll be something to watch. Now, since most of this is still 1 to 2 weeks into the future, you have to kind of keep that in mind and not get overly excited about it. But no matter what we look at, we can see that there's big systems coming in from the west, and you combine that with warm and muggy air, which will exist about a week from now, and that's a pretty good recipe for a stormy setup.
Those systems coming through the west, will they march across the hard red winter wheat growing regions?
Well, they certainly will. The big uncertainty there regards the exact speed of each of these systems. One of the tricky things about forecasting weather in the plains is they have a much higher elevation than in the Corn Belt and the Mid-South. Because of that, they need to have these systems move across slowly, because what that does is it helps an easterly wind flow to suck into that system, and that pulls muggy air in from the Gulf of Mexico and creates a nice setup for storms once the two come together. If the system moves across fast, well, then that setup never takes place, and you get a big system to move across the plains, and it stays dry, and then you get a bunch of rain in the Corn Belt and Mid-South where the humidity values are usually high enough to make rain, and that's why the climate of those areas are a lot wetter. At this point, it looks like these systems will move through at a moderate pace, which of course leaves us in this ambiguous zone where it's not totally certain that you're going to get rain, but you have to at least respect the threat for a big event. At this point, we would say that about half of that crop should receive a half of an inch to a 1 inch of rain in about 7 to 10 days, and that will take a little bit of pressure off of it, but it is pretty dry there, so they're going to need more.
Are there other areas in the northern hemisphere that you're watching the wheat crop?
Well, certainly in Russia. The dryness in Russia is very impressive. If you look at it over the last 1, 2, or even the last 3 months, it's the driest in more than 5 years across this area, and rain chances are pretty meager. On top of that, it's been unusually warm over the last couple of weeks, and it's going to stay that way. So that crop will be way ahead of normal by the time we get into May. If we don't see a big rain in the beginning of May, or at least by the middle of the month, then we'll certainly have some type of problem, and that will also extend into eastern Ukraine. Now, while that is a big deal because of Russia being the biggest wheat exporter in the world, the other side of the coin is that if you move a little bit further to the west, they'll be seeing a lot of rain and a lot of cool weather across Europe. And that's because this upper level high is essentially centered on Russia. And then as you move west, you get into the stormier setup. So things in Europe are looking okay, if not better than okay, as long as we can keep the quality there. And so those two features are kind of offsetting each other to some extent.
And finally, if you check in on the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil for me.
Well, they've had some great rains over the last several weeks, and just because of that alone, it's going to be hard to derail that crop. The dry season is going to make its first appearance over the next week. We see a big upper level high that'll form. And once we get into the middle of May, it's not unusual to have no rain for 4 consecutive months in that corn area. So we're in that transition now between the wet season and the dry season. Again, rain chances are pretty meager for about 1 to 2 weeks. And then once you get into May, you never really have a good chance of rain. So we might be seeing the last of the rains for the corn crop. But it's been so wet over the last couple of weeks, and even earlier this week, that it will be hard to have a real major problem there. But it'll just come down to, are we going to have a slightly better than normal crop, or are we going to have a fantastic crop? And that will eventually be determined by what happens around May 1st, which is a little bit beyond the forecast horizon.
Thank you much, Mike.
Yep, thanks for having me here.
You're welcome. Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Join us here on the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org, or look us up in your favorite podcast applications, places like Spotify and Apple. You can find us on YouTube in the Farm Doc channel, by the way, as well as on Audible and Pandora, Amazon Music, most any other place as well. You can sign up for us on Alexa, too. So check it out wherever you can. And thank you for listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.